Hey everybody, welcome to this week's episode of Whiskey Neat, spirited conversations with interesting people. I'm your host, Christopher Hart. As we continue this trend of fascinating people, we had Ike Barinholtz on a couple of weeks ago. It was a big childhood get for me. I was such a Mad TV fan. This week we sit down with Colin Hanks. Colin Hanks is an amazing actor. He's been around a long time. In fact, I remember the first time I saw Colin Hanks. I was obsessed with the show Roswell as a kid. Same time frame, I think around 2000, the year 2000. Colin's gone on to do some incredible things. He was in Orange County with Jack Black. He was in King Kong with Jack Black. You would think at this point he's got to be best friends with the guy. And he's done some amazing things. He's got this new show coming out called The Offer. Now, for those of you who remember, there was this fantastic film many moons ago called The Godfather. And apparently there's quite the story behind how that film came to be. So there's this all-star cast, Giovanna Ribisi, Miles Teller, Colin Hanks. The show's coming out here shortly on Paramount. I'm halfway through it. I haven't finished the whole thing. It's incredible. I love it. I couldn't be happier with it. So Colin Hanks joins us today to talk about, of course, his career, his family, his upcoming, actually he's got something coming up that I cannot wait to talk to him about. We just have a really good conversation and talk about his own side business. The Hanks Kerchiefs is actually a really great business of his that he's been doing for a couple of years now. Let's pay the bills and then we'll get straight to it. You guys have heard me talk about Waterford a million times. Every week, I'm a huge fan. They've been a big fan and a big sponsor of the show for years now. In 2021, Icons of Whiskey, the Brand Innovator and Irish Distiller of the Year, San Francisco World Spirits Competition, double gold. Waterford has done everything possible to create all organic, all single farm, single origin Irish single malt whiskey. And I literally couldn't be a big fan. I actually have a bottle of the Luna this week, the Biodynamic Luna 1.1. That is what I'm drinking now. The product actually has all the information about where the grains come from, where it was distilled, where it was aged, all on the bottle. It's absolutely fantastic. So I couldn't be a bigger fan. Check out Waterford. Go to glassrev.com/Waterford. Google Waterford Irish Single Malt Whiskey. Check it out and go get you some. Without further ado, please welcome this week's guest, Colin Hanks. Cheers. Thanks so much for doing the show. Welcome. It's very nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too, man. Thanks for having me.
I'm very excited to talk to you. Part of the big reason why I do this show is to gush over childhood people I've been following for the past couple of decades. A couple of weeks ago we had Ike Barinholtz. I'm a huge comedy fan. Been following him since Mad TV. And one of the first shows I ever got into that wasn't silly and comedy was Roswell.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So 20 years I've been a fan of Colin Hanks.
Well, now I may need that drink now that I think about it, because you're making me feel old. But no, I appreciate that. That's awesome. I am consistently amazed by how many people talk to me about that show and tell me how much they dig it. And if they're feel that way about a show from 20 years ago, that is a very special thing.
I know that I've talked to some people who, on top of being actors, they also watch television. Have you seen the remake? Has anyone ever asked you about it?
No, I haven't. And ironically, I actually know some people involved. I know that Shiri Appleby has directed numerous episodes of the show. And she, of course, played Blaze Parker on our version. I know that Jason Bear, I believe he acted on it for a few episodes. And I also know Julie Plec through mutual friends who helped revive the show. So I hear it's great, but I haven't had a chance to watch.
Well, I out of nostalgia, there's I had to watch it, right? Like I watched I watched the first show. I had to give the second show another gander, and I've thoroughly enjoyed it so far. But nothing quite does it for me as the original show. So it's very nice to meet you. Was the whole point of that long diatribe.
Oh, well, nice to meet you too, man. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
There's so much I want to talk to you about. I mean, one of the first things I saw you in besides that was a lot of comedy stuff. And I do want to talk about your transition from comedy films to like some pretty heavy serious acting. You've talked about it a little bit, but I think you said you were actually trying to get away from some of the silliness to do more serious roles. Was there anything in particular that you, because you said there was a period of time, I think this was the interview you did with Michael Rosenbaum, also a big fan, Smallville shout out. You said there was a period of time in which you just were saying no to those types of roles specifically. Was there anything that the first thing that popped in my head, was there ever something that you passed on that you went back and realized or wish you didn't because you.
Well, I mean, there's definitely things that I passed on that I think looking back, I said, well, if I hadn't done that, then, maybe from a business perspective, that would have been good, and it would have put me in good graces with, new people at movie studios and whatnot, and all of that. From a creative standpoint, no. I still feel creatively about that. The truth of the matter is that I've always been very comfortable in comedy. It's always been something I've enjoyed. I am also a huge comedy fanatic. And I still do it. I did 4 years on a CBS show. Where I was falling down, making a fool out of myself a lot of times, and I had a blast doing it. But there was a period, really kind of a right around after. Well, it happened during Orange County, during the making of it, but definitely after was really the portion of it. But my mom passed away. And that combined with September 11, September 11th, really just
Any particular year or just that day in general?
no, it's just that day in general. I had a lot of bad things happen. I got a parking ticket. It was rough. I should joke about said things, but those two things really kind of put a lot in perspective for me. And there was a part of me that knew I know I can do that comedy, those comedy roles. And I know I can do that. But I've done a version of all of those roles over and over and over again. The guy that really isn't happy where he is, and if I could just get this one thing, then I'll be happy. And that it could be, getting invited to the party or getting the girl or getting into the college, whatever. And I just said, I want to try and find some other things. I want to try and find some stuff that really sort of like excites me and sort of speaks to me and would allow me to be able to show, another part of myself as opposed to just, the goofy guy. And as a result, didn't work as much, or worked in smaller movies. I don't think, I mean, I still stand by a lot of the decisions that I made. And as a result, I've been able to do all sorts of different things. I was able to go off and do a play in London. I was able to go do Broadway. I've been able to do documentaries. It really set me on a path of saying, it's a big sandbox, and I don't want to just play on one side of it. I'd really like to play in as many parts of it as I can. And it really sort of set me off on a path. And now I kind of like am able to go in between all of them. I kind of have free rein. I'm sort of a social butterfly in that regard.
Well, I think, I mean, my opinion means nothing, but I think you're correct. I think that if you lean too heavy into one thing at the very beginning, like I can think of a few actors. I won't name any names, but they're so funny and in so many funny things so early on that you can only think of them as funny. And I think it's very. I think you're very well established as both a tremendous actor as well. Now, I'm not supposed to blow smoke up your butt, but I think that people respect you greatly and everything. I mean, I'm halfway through The Offer, It's so good. And it's so...
Well, but remember, your opinion doesn't matter. You said so yourself. No, I'm totally joking. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Very,
I mean,
kind of you to say.
And then Drunk History, you know, like you got to do the silly thing and the serious thing. And now I don't think anyone puts you into one particular box. I don't think you've been pigeonholed at all.
No. And that was also another big part of it. You know, I mean, I'll be quite honest. I was sort of coming up, right in the middle of that sort of teen actor boom. I mean, I was on the WB for Christ's sake, you know, so I was around when there were just a plethora of piñatas and sorry, a Three Amigos reference. There were just so many teen movies and teen shows and whatnot. And I noticed that, you know, there are so many of them and a lot of them ended up turning into like, let's just embarrass these characters as much as we can. And then they're stuck. Those actors are kind of trapped, you know, they're kind of trapped as, you know, the guy that, you know, that humped the pie or, you know, whatever. There's numerous examples. And Biggs is always is a guy that I always have such respect for because he's just sort of rolled with it and still been able to work. You know, but there are a lot of guys that, you know, a lot of people I think that, you know, we're just sort of part of that. And then we're just kind of like chewed up and kind of spit out, you know, and I didn't want to do that. There was just something about that. I had heard enough stories about, you know, the reasons why you shouldn't do that and be mindful of that. Cause these things do live forever. I mean, hell, the striptease scene in Roswell lives forever. I knew, you know, I still get, you know, have people talking to me about that. So, you know, I definitely didn't want to do anything that was too embarrassing. And as a result, I think, you know, the pigeonhole was the likable guy, the guy that really wants to get the date and all of that sort of stuff. And I did versions of those things. But eventually I wanted to just try and do something else. And I was fortunate enough to be able to be given the opportunity on a few occasions and, you know, didn't stink too bad.
So you've done, off the top of my head, this isn't a planned question, but, two films with Jack Black, one serious, yeah. one not serious. I'll let you guess which ones. King Kong and Orange County.
But, I was also in the Tenacious D movie for a brief moment, but it wasn't with Jack. It was with Kyle.
Yeah. So, and you being such a fan of, and for those who don't know, the wall of albums behind you, which, by the way, I thought was the coolest thing I've ever heard someone say. I mean, throughout the years, I've heard of actors collecting little memorable pieces of their journey, but my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong here, that wall of albums behind you is actually from when you're on a job, you'll actually go out and you'll bring a record player with you, but no albums.
Yeah.
And you'll go out and you'll hit the local record stores and you'll tag those albums with the city you found them in.
That is correct. Yes. Almost all of these are documented by the city that I buy them in. I've sort of found that it's a great way to get out of your hotel when you're on location and actually see the city that you're in. The irony is that then at some point you need to go back into that hotel room and not leave it if you ever want to listen to the music that are on these things. But yeah, I've got, well, this one right here, that one's Hollywood. This Yola Tango record was, in Austin, Texas. Let's see. This is a great compilation called Las Vegas Grind. That was in my hometown of Sacramento, California. I got to be careful when I put them back because the first thing I did during the pandemic was alphabetize everything. But yeah, I've got all sorts of memories. The Violent Femmes record was in Omaha, Nebraska. So that was when I was shooting a movie called Lucky. I found that it was not only a great way to get out and explore those towns, but it was also just something, it was just a ritual, a habit, and it was a good one. You know, I mean, it hurt the wallet better than anything else, but I remember someone telling me that it's important for actors to have hobby that isn't drinking, which is ironic given
Ouch.
the name of this program. Well, but really, you
Personal
want to
attacks,
do
buddy. It's early.
well, but you don't want to be at the hotel bar every single night
Sure.
while you're there. And so it's good to have some stuff to do in the daytime and on a day off. And so yeah, I just thought it was a cool thing to do. And then should my kids ever want this when I'm dead and gone, it'll be a nice little addition to all the records.
I couldn't agree more. My kids will be fighting over quite the whiskey collection. But so I three daughters and a son myself, four kids.
No, well
You
done.
yeah, appreciate it. We've got it narrowed down to one or two causes. So you specifically have mentioned in past interviews that you aren't you're hoping that your daughters don't head the Hollywood route. And one of the things that popped up when I heard you say this, essentially you had mentioned that you want them to do whatever they want to do, and you want them to find out what that is in life, and that you aren't you're hoping that they avoid the Hollywood route. And as someone who yourself took that route, right? Like you followed in the family footsteps, why was the first question I thought. Like, what about your experience is something that you're hoping your daughters avoid?
Well, look, first and foremost, I want them to be happy with whatever it is that they want to do. And if it ends up being something in the arts, whether it be acting or singing or dancing or any of these things, at the end of the day, I'm going to support them 100% of the way. But I think, and I'm give me this brief moment. It's because you asked, but I'm going to go into that sort of territory of, it's not as easy as it always looks, and there's a lot of heartbreak and there's a lot of frustration and fear and stress. Just as an actor, I mean, that's just for everybody that decides to be an actor. And then on top of that, there is an expectation and there is this whole other kind of thing that you have to deal with when you are second generation or third generation, whatever, that really doesn't have anything to do with you. A lot of times it's not even about you, it's a question about them. And
Sure.
so it kind of can get maddening at times because they're looking at it in a way that is different from how I look at it. And
Things beyond
so
your control whatsoever.
Things beyond my control. People make assumptions about, me or my family or whatever, and it must have been so easy and all that sort of stuff. And again, it's not their job to see the struggles that I've had. It's not their job to know how difficult being an actor can be just in general. And by all means, I'm not saying that I haven't been fortunate or that I'm one of the luckiest people around, for sure. But that kind of struggle I wouldn't wish on anybody,
Sure.
much less my own kids. But at the end of the day, it's gonna come down to the same thing that they're gonna have to make the same decision that I made, which was, look, is this what you want to do? Can you see yourself doing anything else? Because if you can, maybe this isn't it. Maybe you should try some other things first, and really figure out what you're truly passionate about and what you can't imagine not doing. And at that time in my life, and still, I love acting. I did. It keeps me up at night. It gets me excited in the morning when I get to go to work, and it gets me, it gets me through, through the days, and it helps me, exercise some of the own stuff that I got going on in my head. So I'm incredibly fortunate, and if that's what they want to do, it is my job to support them in that cause.
Yeah, I know that, and you've talked about this a little bit, the difficulty of navigating in your own, not in someone else's shadow. I can definitely, especially with any, because a big part of this industry is PR, right? Like a big part of it is
Is make believe. It's show
yeah,
business. Yeah,
yeah.
totally.
But there are things that.
The glitz, the glamour. Yeah, totally.
But also, I'm the only people I can think of it for the moment. I'm just going to say the Kardashians is whatever's happening in any one of their other lives affects the other lives, and people ask about it, and it's all this intertwined thing that's got to be quite difficult to navigate at times. And thank God your father is America's dad, right? Like he's the he's got this persona of the nicest, like harmless. He's
Well,
not.
yeah, you know, I'm only stopping you there because I think there is a big difference between being an actor and being a celebrity, and some people are both. Some people are just one thing, and celebrity and all of that's. I mean
Difficult.
that it's but it's challenging. I don't want to say it's difficult. It's not difficult. It's challenging. And I think what that means is that your world changes, the way that people react with you changes, your ability to go out and about changes depending on how big of a celebrity you are. And you what I the decision I made very early on was that I wanted to be an actor. That was the thing that I wanted to do. That's my job. Anything else is a byproduct. And any celebrity is that's a that would be the byproduct of what my job is, what my profession is. And being a celebrity looks great. A lot of times it is. Trust me, it's really nice when I can get a reservation at a restaurant. But at the end of the day, you ask anybody, that's kind of like the best perk. And look, there's a lot of really great things about it. But I'm an actor, and have since become, added a couple of other things to that resume. But that's really how I wanted to that's what I wanted to consider myself. And the celebrity is just something on top of that. And in one regard, I've been fortunate in that, I've got a little bit of a guide as to how to deal with the other aspect,
Sure.
not the act, there's the acting aspect, but then, there's some tips and pointers on how to handle the other stuff, which everyone kind of deals with at some point. If they're fortunate enough. And so that's really sort of the main difference there. But I always wanted to make sure that no matter what, and this sort of speaks to what we were talking about earlier in terms of the kind of roles that I wanted to do, I wanted to make sure that people understood what I do and what my job is and the stuff, the work that I do. And get to a stage where I felt like that work could speak for itself, whether or not people knew about who I was related to or any of the, any of the other stuff, that they could at least look at that and say, oh, that's good. He's good.
And I think you're
And as
there. I think that's fair.
oh, I appreciate it.
Yeah, and again, not to blow smoke up your butt, but I think it's fair to say that you everything I've seen you in okay, I'm about to blow is just I don't see you and think of anyone other
I
than
hope
you.
it's not blow chunks. I really hope you're not saying you're about to blow chunks, because that'd be bad. That'd be bad to throw up on your own whiskey themed show.
Yeah. Well, no, definitely not. But I've been doing this 4 years now. I've learned to we've got a great guy off camera to cut it in case I do.
That's where I'm more than ready to do a drunk history version of this podcast, should it come that way.
One of the things I and this will be the last thing I touch on this is you growing up the way that you did and seeing what other people your age have gone through. You come off very much like, how do I say this? So my four kids, I lean very heavy on the dad side. Like I love being a father. I think of myself as pretty well-rounded and family oriented. That's how you come off. Whereas other people in Hollywood that may have come up with a similar upbringing, maybe struggled with the life, so to speak, or the pressure beyond it. Did you feel, I mean, you don't strike me as, say, someone, I was trying to think of other celebrity children, and the first one that came to mind for some god awful reason is Corey Haim. But just like so Jonathan Taylor Thomas and all the other 90s heartthrob kids. No, just this, the pressure of making sure that as you grow up, you aren't put into a box of the pressure of Hollywood. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, I think that goes to sort of what I was talking to about that idea of just sort of having that awareness of not wanting to put myself in a position where it could just be that,
Right.
that you would just be known for that one thing in which, the character is completely embarrassed and has something horrible happen, and then you're only that person, that guy. But really, I think it was just more sort of a gut instinct than an awareness of that, And yeah, look, at the end of the day, it's you're just trying to make the best guesses you can as to what you should or shouldn't do. And sometimes you get lucky and you make a couple of right ones, and sometimes you get unlucky and you make some wrong ones.
Well, you mentioned in a couple podcasts, which it was amazing, was the Harold Ramis story.
Oh,
He
yeah.
gave you this tip that basically you don't want to do something that is overly embarrassing, that sticks with you, that people scream out at you for, years to come.
When you're walking your kids to school.
Especially with, two little girls and some guy from across the streets yelling, the guy that banged the pie or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. No, I mean that's all part of it, and that really stuck with me. I think that was actually probably one of the sort of aha moments for me, where I just went like, oh, well, Harold Ramis thinks about this stuff. You got to have an awareness of these things. And I think that really sort of informed the decisions going forward as well.
Well, one of the things I to make a very smooth transition, one of the things I want to talk to you about was Hanks kerchiefs.
Yeah, man.
So you started a I've always said handkerchief, and I guess that would.
Well, so are you ready for a little interesting thing? Yeah, you're saying handkerchief, but what that is in common parlance is an actual handkerchief.
Correct. Yeah.
And so, I mean, there I could give a whole history lesson on this stuff, the difference between a bandana and a kerchief and how they all started and how eventually they all sort of became the same thing in a certain dimension size. But normally there's, a bandana, which is a larger piece of fabric, which we sort of think of now, right? And then there were hand kerchiefs. What was a kerchief? Kerchief was what Kleenex was before they were disposable.
Right.
They were something you can fold up and put in your hand, and then they just sort of became one word. Handkerchief. And people don't realize there's a D in there. Handkerchief. That's actually what it is.
So does it drive you nuts when people say handkerchief?
No, not at all, because that's what I thought it was for the longest time as well. And then I did a little digging and I actually found out what it is. And so, yeah, I mean, look, I did a documentary about Tower Records and I met the founder of Tower Records is a guy named Russ Solomon, who was a fascinating guy. I was so fortunate enough to meet him and become friends with him. And I learned a tremendous amount from him about a lot of different things. He really inspired me and sort of ended up, he wasn't even really aware that he was kind of giving me the blueprint on how I was even going to finish making the movie about his own life. But he really inspired me to look at things differently and to trust people. And if you think it's a good idea and and you think you can do it, just give it a shot and try not to lose too much money, you know? And I was always looking, I'm always looking for creative new outlets, like I sort of said, looking for other areas of the sandbox to play in. And graphic design has always been one of those things. And I, I've always just loved the intricate patterns that kerchiefs can have, bandanas can have. And it was always an item that was, that was my American Express card, that you never leave home without. That was just the thing that I always had with me and I always carried with me. And I found them to be, incredibly helpful and useful. And so I said, that would be a fun idea to maybe try to do a little clothing company. I mean, it's one size, it doesn't need to be sewn to anything else. It's pretty straightforward. So I did a little digging and asking around, and enough people said, that's actually a pretty good idea. You should give that a shot. That, that I did. And Hank's Kerchiefs was the result.
And you've been doing it how long now?
We've been doing it for about 3 years, I want to say, 3 or 4 years. I'm not too good with time nowadays, but yeah, it's a trip trying to learn an entire new industry in your 40s. especially when your primary job is wearing makeup and pretending to be other people for a living, and math is definitely not a strong suit, but. It's been really exhilarating and a lot of fun working with an entirely different set of people, but people who are just as passionate and get just as excited about something else, and then being able to sort of take it out to the world and sort of tell people about kerchiefs and tell the history and just try a different endeavor. And it's been incredibly rewarding and a blast, and hopefully we can keep the ship going in the right direction.
So I love, I was talking to Ian Somerhalder and Paul Wesley about the name of their bourbon, Brothers Bond mm-hmm. Bourbon. And I was mm-hmm. Talk me through the name, how you came up with the name, blah, blah, blah. And they talk about a text message thread and all these great names, the two brothers, the brothers in Bond, and they come up with Brothers Bond. Obviously, Hank's kerchiefs are a play on a pun. But in my head, I imagine like a drunk history episode where you guys are trying to think of the name. Tell me the story about the moment the name was decided.
The moment the name was decided, well, there was initially some of the guys that I was working with, they wanted to call it Hank's in Your Pocket. And, and I said, yeah, no, that's not really going to work because there's actually a lot more uses to kerchiefs than just something in your pocket. Although that's primarily where mine are. I'll be honest, I don't really recall exactly where it came up. I can't remember if it was my wife or if it was me, but I just remember the idea of Hank's kerchiefs, or Hank's kerchiefs, right? Or Hank's kerchiefs, which is really sort of the play on handkerchiefs. I just went, well, that's the name. That's it. I mean, it can't. And people were saying like, I don't know, that's hard to say. And then I said, well, then make it two words, Hank's kerchiefs. That's fine. All of our kerchiefs are named after people anyway. So it just sort of like, oh, well, Hank has got a kerchief, as does Dorothy and Al and Russ and Sean and Timmy. So I just thought that it was just kind of a fun wink and a nod and something that was interesting. And that instinct, that sort of gut instinct, that's pure Russ Solomon. I learned that from Russ, and I just went, nope, that's going
to
be it.
It has
and,
to be, yeah.
And that's what it was. That's what it was, it was destined to be.
So, I work this show is filmed here in Houston. It's at Gal Media. And one of the subsidiaries or partner businesses here is a company called Sports Map. Sports mm-hmm. Map obviously covers sports, and they have another secondary item called Culture Map. Culture Map's mm-hmm. all over Texas. It's in all major cities. and it covers the culture of that city, that sort of thing. And they've leaned towards automotive map, weed map, and you know, because we're right on the cusp of Texas doing something, I'm sure of it.
Of course.
And hopefully it's not at women's rights. And
absolutely.
Texas is a weird place. Automotive map, culture map, sports map. So has there been thoughts of expanding more businesses under the Hank's Pun name? And if so, I have three to throw at you right now.
Oh, let me hear it. Give me a good pitch.
All right, let me get another drink in me. Here we go.
Oh, okay. Here you go. Liquid Courage.
All right. I've got Hank's Kerchiefs. You got it. Actually, I think we have four. And Barry on deck, a stand-up comic and great producer today. It came up with Hank's for the Memories. It's a greeting card company, a greeting card company that mostly just quotes from your movies.
All right. Yeah.
Hank's for the Memories.
Yeah. Hank's for the Memories. That'll work.
I came up with Hanksgiving. It's a nonprofit 501c3 that donates autographed pictures of your family to people without the ability to print pictures at home.
Not the first person to coin Hanksgiving, but definitely the first person to come up with a business around.
Oh, you got to be charitable. You got to be charitable.
Yeah, there's to be. Hank's Kerchiefs is a part of the proceeds of every sale go to charity.
All right. You spend a lot of time. I know you're a sports guy. You spend a lot of time at sports events. I've got a vegan hot dog for Hank's. Vegan hot dog Franks. And they are 100% kosher, all vegan hot dogs made from discarded autograph photos of your family.
I'm sensing a theme. I like it. I like it. There are many of us. That is true. Yeah, you know, I first off, I will not be investing in any of those ideas. I'm sorry to say. But I appreciate the hustle. I always respect the hustle. I don't hate the player, hate the game. We definitely thought about, sort of trying to branch out and do other things under sort of like a Hank's kind of brand. But I also, one of the things I learned from Ross is don't go too crazy with your ideas. Make sure you do one thing really, really well before you try and do a whole bunch of other stuff. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I completely agree. I loved the name. I've got this newfound fascination with kerchiefs, right? So one of the things that, and there's no way you would know this, but besides the show, I own a couple of spirits brands, and we spend a lot of time tasting through, blending, producing products.
Yeah.
And when you do that, your nose runs. Every time I drink, my nose runs constantly. Mm-hmm. And even now, I've got a little hanky here because drinking and talking to Colin Hanks. So I've always loved the idea. I used to, back in the day, I used to carry them around, little pocket squares that you would, just kind of.
Absolutely.
I kind of moved away from it, and I don't really know why. And then I saw your business page. I went through and I was looking through it, and I just thought, I love this idea. And we have this great, like prairie dog that, not a prairie dog. What are they called? Like a Australian shepherd dog.
A herding
blue
dog.
Healer, a blue healer. Yeah. We've got a blue healer that we put a bandana around, and she looks so great.
Right.
And so I thought, man, I'm newfound interest or revived interest in handkerchiefs. I'm totally in.
Oh, well, there was a period where we were actually just doing sort of triangles, and we called them hound's kerchiefs. But we sold out, and then we just haven't been able to do any other ones, because I said, well, why don't they just buy all of the kerchiefs anyways, because dogs go through them pretty quickly anyways. But yeah, I mean, the what I loved about just the idea of doing it was that there is a story and a history to kerchiefs. I've had numerous people tell me that, that they have kerchiefs that their grandfather used to have, and they still smell like their grandfather, even though he died 10 years ago, and that they're incredibly important family heirlooms now. I've always looked at it as, it's an extension of yourself. It's it's like your favorite shirt, your favorite concert tee, your favorite pair of shoes. These, these are things that become a part of you. And it's not just a fashion accessory. It's not just a snot rag, although that's apparently the only thing my grandfather used it for. But, you know, certainly is handy when you don't want to touch that doorknob. All right, well, I got a handkerchief there. It certainly is handy when your kid spills another drink. Okay, great. We've got a napkin to sop all that up. I've just found them to be great utility items as well as fashionable items as well. You know, it's sort of a joke that we have, but you know, anyone from a model to a mechanic can find a use for one of these things. And I really like the challenge of, you know, how do we convey that? How do we tell people about that? How do we tell that story? This is all stuff that I just sort of soaked up from Russ, that idea of just like, how do we look at these things? Because it's not just, you know, we're not just trying to sell something to make money. We're actually selling something that we're passionate about.
The word that comes to mind, and this is something that my wife and I have been obsessed with since we started having kids, is legacy pieces. Mm-hmm. We live in an era of design obsolescence, right? So things mm-hmm. are only made to last a couple of years, or tissues may Correct. Be immediately thrown away.
Correct.
And since we started having kids, we've been obsessed with it could start with something as small as an armoire or a quilt, something or a record. Yeah. Something that I can pass down to my children when I leave.
Absolutely.
And, flasks are a dime a dozen. Mm-hmm. And last year we started working with this company called Jacob Bromwell, where they all do all handmade copper flasks that are actually meant to last literally generations. And I want my kids to go through my stuff when I die and not think, what can we throw away? But like, that was Dad's handkerchief.
Totally. Isn't it crazy how all of a sudden you just get at a point in your life where you just go like, when I die, I want my kids to think about me. Yeah. You know, when I die, this is all going to be yours. And then it's like, oh, Dad, shut up about dying. All right. Seriously, we get it. You're going through a thing. We understand. But all of these things have emotional value. And I think once you get to be a certain age, and once you have, you know, maybe it's once you have kids, or once you reach a certain number, who knows what it is, you go through an experience, it's life changing. But you just start looking at things a little bit differently, and things no longer are just items. They actually have memories attached to them. They actually have value attached to them that you cannot put a price on. And, you know, I've always been a music fanatic, and have, you know, all of these relationships with different bands and artists' music, and you know, that's an ephemeral thing. You know, a song doesn't even exist physically except on a record, but it's not a song, it's a record, you know, like, but it is important to you. And you know, once you really start thinking about things in that kind of perspective, and you start having passion for things, you want to try and find a way to be able to funnel that and use that or add that, you know, imprint onto it, and hope that people see, you know, how important it is to you. And so maybe it will also be important to them. That's the human condition, man. That's people trying to connect, you know.
It's never been more important to me than right now. We've got our two oldest are about to be, they're 16 and 17. They're about to be adults.
And oh, wow.
I want them to, you know, I've got this cigar box, my very first box of cigars I ever bought, and they weren't even that good. They were just shit cigars. And, but I've used that box next to my sink every day for the past 15 years. Oh, and, yeah. It's just an empty box that I put, like, it's a catch-all, put change and dental picks that I clean my teeth out with. Like, I'll just empty my pockets and throw it in the thing. I'm hoping that when I die, they'll want that for, I don't know. I just, hopefully without the dental picks, but just, you know, just something of me, you know?
Who knows? Who knows? So
So I wanted to ask you about it. First, we've got to talk about the offer real quick, and then I want to talk about an upcoming project that you're working on because I have
Sure.
a lot of questions about it. The offer. So
Yeah.
I'm only halfway through. How was it? You're working with some of Giovanna Ribisi is one of my
Oh, yeah.
all-time favorite. I mean, he's up there with Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Like there's something about that class of actor that's been around the last, two, 3 decades that I've just, there's something special about him. How was
Absolutely.
it? How was the experience?
It was great. I mean, it was a little bit of a daunting task. They sort of say, well, we're going to make a 10-hour series about a 3-hour movie that was one of the most important movies of all time. And, the first instinct is, well, what the hell is going to be in those 10 hours? And it turns out that, this, it turns out it's quite a lot. There was a lot going on during the making of The Godfather, a lot of obstacles, and the show, obviously for the people who love The Godfather, it's going to be a blast because it's just gives you all this insight into how they made the movie and all of these things that happened in between, a lot of which some people know, and most of which, most people don't. But it is a really good example of how difficult it is to make a movie, how challenging it is to make a movie. It requires hundreds and hundreds of miracles to happen. It's a miracle if you've got a good idea. It's a miracle if you can write a good script. It's a miracle if someone wants to make it. It's a miracle if you're given the money to make it. It's a miracle if you're able to cast who you want. It's a miracle if, it doesn't rain on day 45 when that's the only day you have that exterior that you really love so much. And it's a miracle if the finished product is any good. And it's definitely a miracle if anyone's given the opportunity to see it and wants to tell their friends about it. Every artistic adventure has that same requirement. And The Godfather's no different. I think, The Godfather obviously was one of the greatest movies of all time. It's, celebrating its 50th anniversary. And there's so much about it that is just flawless, where people just think, oh, well, that couldn't have been hard. And the truth of the matter is, it was incredibly difficult, the amount of things that, the amount of hoops that needed to be jumped through and the amount of obstacles that were thrown in front of the production. So, the show is a really fun example of all of that. It just so happens to be about,
Yeah, I had no idea, but it was during a pivotal point in American history in which Italian people were still very much so. There was prejudice or
Oh,
assumptions,
yeah.
and
Oh, very much.
so knowing how impactful that, which is technically not a word, I just recently found out, but knowing how great and significant that movie was to American cinema history, I had no clue how hard it was to make. And so this has not only been fun, it's been educational, it's been informational. And again, I can't give anything away, obviously, but I will say that it was.
Spoiler, they made the movie.
Yeah.
They were able to overcome the obstacles and made the film.
And
Spoiler alert.
it turned out great.
Turned out pretty good. Turned out pretty good. Turns out they
Pretty
made a lot of
well
right calls.
received. So-so.
Yeah.
Well, you've got something coming up, and I'll say this and I'll let you go. But I saw that you're making an actual series based off the kidnapping.
Oh, yeah.
What was the name of that movie? Abducted in Plain Sight, or the documentary
Yeah.
series, Abducted
Yeah.
in Plain Sight, and you play the father,
Yeah. Yeah.
Bob Broberg. That I mean, when that, I want to know, did they come to you for that? Did you go looking for that? What was the, how did this come about that you decided you want to be a part of this project?
They came to me. I was in the middle of making the offer, after the sort of 2-year hiatus that we've all had to collectively be on. I was able to string some work together and did a season of American Crime Story, and then was able to go directly into the offer. And this phone call came in saying there's this really incredible, crazy, kind of hard to believe story about a young girl who was kidnapped by a family friend, not once but twice, And that's just one of the crazy things that happened, you know, to this poor family. Would you be interested? And so I read the first few scripts and instantly was like, I don't want to do this. No, you know,
Made me
I
think of the Harold Ramis story.
well, I mean, to a little, yeah, to a degree, there's definitely
There's that
components of
one
it for
thing that
sure.
happens.
Yes, there is that one thing that happened. And that, look, I mean, this is what I'm talking about. I wrestled with this a lot. I haven't really talked about this at all because we're still making it. But I wrestled with this a lot. You know, there was something about this story that both scared me to death, confounded me on numerous levels, and just made me not want to do it, but yet I could not stop thinking about
That's how I felt
it.
watching it.
And yeah, and the documentary is good. You know, there's a lot in there. And there's a lot of stuff that they didn't get to that I really wanted to know. And luckily, the show, which is going to be called Friends of the Family, or A Friend of the Family. Luckily, you know, or the limited series, I think, is going to be able to answer a lot of those things and really show the struggle that the Brobergs went through. And they went through a lot. They were put through, you know, kind of hell on earth, and were incredibly innocent, dare I say, incredibly naive people. This was a scenario in which I just couldn't stop thinking about it, and I just said, "I am." Can we cuss on this show? You already did. I'm going to say the word that you said. I was scared shitless about doing it, because you know this is not the kind of role that I would be looking for. This is not the kind of character. I mean, he's literally one of the most innocent, childlike people I've ever played, and that's kind of the thing that I've been trying to get away from. But there was something about his journey and the family's journey and how they were able to persevere and get through what they were able to get through while also wrestling with just incredible personal issues and bad people that I just there it just got to the point where I just said, you want to know what? I just need to just to You know, this is an opportunity to do something. And a friend of mine once said, you know, sometimes you just gotta just jump into the hot tub of opportunity and just bubble. And so that's what we're doing. I'm just sort of just leaning into how uncomfortable it all is and just try and do the best job I can at sort of getting into the mindset of this dad, you know, going through this horrible experience.
Yeah,
So we'll see if it works.
I think when I saw that you were playing that role, I can't think of I can't think of anything else you've done that has been this heavy,
Correct.
this intense. So I do
Correct.
think you're right. I do think that this is good. This is something that will be unforgettable. I mean, I will never forget when my wife and I watched the original documentary. And you can't help but think about that era of America in which things people was very latchkey and just kind of, I mean, that was like the era of serial killers and things. I mean, it was just such a weird era of American history. So I do think that this it's not going to be easy, but I do think it's going to be one of the most intense and incredible things that you do. And I was excited to, I was intrigued, I was confused. I was like, man, this is going to be something for sure.
Well, when all is said and done, and hopefully we've gotten all the miracles that we need in order to finish making the thing, and if it turns out to be any good, maybe we have to come back and pick your brain about it. Well, you
Are you
can give
saying
me
my
a
opinion
report card.
matters?
No, I'm not saying your opinion matters at all. That is such a beautiful callback. You beat me to it. My intro to it was too long. I should have just gotten to the quick right away.
It's all good. All right, so we'll let you go. But I did calling. Oh, speaking of callbacks, on your last filming adventure out into the world of used records at record stores, What is the one album in your last trip that's really stuck with you that was a pleasant surprise, maybe?
Oh gosh, that's a really difficult question. That's almost like a Sophie's choice to me. It's really
Doesn't have to be your
hard.
favorite, but if
No,
you
no, 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 no. I hear you. Trust me. A lot of times they're not my favorite. A lot of times they can just be something that's just a nice surprise. Gosh, I wish I could find it right now, to be quite honest.
Well, it's in alphabetical order.
Oh, look at this callback king now, all of a sudden. Who's really good at comedy? Here I am, the professional, and you're beating me to all the punches.
There's a go ahead.
I don't know if I could really pick one, to be honest. The
Fair enough.
thing that I the thing that I really truly love is that it is, in a way, its own sense of time travel. You can go to a record store and get all new stuff, or you can go to a completely different record store that deals only with old stuff. And who knows what it is that you're going to find, and who knows if there's going to be anything good on it. But I just enjoy going out and discovering new stuff. That's how I got into jazz. That's how I got into blues. It's how I even got into some classical music, believe it or not. It's just been this great way to sort of just expand my horizons, so to speak. That sounds dramatic. I don't mean it to, but it's great. I will say there is one here that I want to talk about only because it made me laugh when I saw it. So this is a record that I got in Shawnee, Kansas, when I was working in Iowa. I drove down to Kansas, and the album is called The Greatest Jazz Concert in the World. And I went, that's balls. That takes some balls to just say, yep, we did a poll. This is the greatest jazz concert in the world. It doesn't say of all time, but it's kind of
Implied.
trying to take that. Yeah, it's implied. And turns out it's pretty damn good. Turns out it's pretty damn good. It's got honestly some of the biggest names, and really sort of introduced me to a bunch of them. I mean, I'm just now putting together that T-Bone Walker was on this record. He's one of my favorites. But between Zoot Sims and Coleman Hawkins and I mean, there's just Duke Ellington, Ella Fitzgerald. It's like that. I would have never discovered that. I would have never thought about it. Yet here we are. Here I am talking about the greatest jazz concert in the world. So,
That's awesome. Well,
yeah.
listen, I can't thank you enough. I know that you do a lot of interviews. I hope this one left some mark. It was very nice to meet you. I can't wait to finish the series, and I will be just blindly tweeting at you throughout the rest of the episodes while I work through them.
Well, I appreciate it. This has been a great conversation, man. This is one of the good ones. This has been fun. So I look forward to the next time. And
Well,
next
cheers.
time, let's time it like a little bit more West Coast later in the day so I can actually join
Sure, not a problem. In the meantime, I'm drinking at 10 a.m. So,
you. There you go. I'll
cheers,
take it. Cheers. Take
buddy.
care. Thank you so much. And thank you so much for all the kind words. It means a lot. Your opinion actually does matter. So
Actually
thank
matter.
you very
Can you
much.
just clip that and save that last part for me? I forget.